dots. Connecting the dots.
So we talk
every day at this hour, Monday through Friday, about life, the universe, and everything to the dulcet strains of Ludwig van Beethoven. And we are here. Today is Thursday. Normally on Thursday, our Thursday co-host is Chris Franklin. Chris is going to be gone this week and the next because she's off. If you please, she's actually taking vacation and going on spending some time with friends and family and doing things that don't center around me. I don't even know what that's like, but at any rate, we are not left unprovisioned, however, because today we have with us, we have Tricia Bulla. Tricia's been on the show before. She runs an organization called the St. Francis Xavier Lay Missionary Society, and she's very active as a Catholic apostle and evangelist, working all over Asia, bringing the gospel, bringing the Catholic faith to all kinds of people, all over the place on the continent of Asia. And I got to know Tricia a couple of years ago. I'm a big fan, big supporter of her work and of the St. Francis Xavier Society. And so I thought, well, this sounds like a perfect opportunity to have Tricia back on the show because Chris Franklin won't be here. So I want to welcome Trish Bulla to the show. Hello, Chris. Trish.
Oh, hi, Mark. Good to be here. Yes.
Hey, glad to have you. Here. You're good back in the country. Yeah, you're back in the country now. Having been abroad for how long have you been gone now?
I was gone for a couple months during Lent, came back for a month for Easter, and then went back over for a month. So now I'm back for a few months to train some new novice lay missionaries for serving overseas.
Fantastic. Tell people a little bit about what you do, about what the St. Francis Xavier Lay Missionary Society does.
We're basically a Catholic lay missionary apostolate that trains, sends, and supports Catholic lay men and women to serve as missionaries on the ground in Asia, where they do sort of a diverse ministry of evangelization, faith formation, and social justice work, primarily focusing on the faith needs of young adults throughout Asia.
Okay, fantastic. So for those who have not met you before, and by the way, if you want to talk to Tricia or me, by all means, give us a call out there in Radio Land. You can give us a call by calling 1-573-4-BREAD-4. 1-573-4-BREAD-4. You can call us or text us at that number. And you can also tweet us at Breadbox Media. For those not familiar with you or your work, how did you wind up doing what you do?
It's interesting. You definitely get called to this kind of work. I was finishing up my graduate work at Stanford University, and I was overseas in Asia, and people who were seeking God began crossing paths with me and asking me questions about my faith, and I found myself in a position to share my faith with total strangers in different parts of Asia, and I had never seen myself in that kind of position back home. And here, like almost every week, I was running into somebody who had questions about God or you know, Christ, Christianity, different aspects of the faith. And I was able to share that with them and help them on their journey of faith. And when I got back home, people said, "This isn't normal. This doesn't happen to just anybody." And after a year or two of discernment, I ended up going back. So... And 10 years later, here I am. I've been serving as a missionary in Asia for about a decade now.
Wow. That's fantastic. Yeah, there. I mean, this isn't normal. That's a great quote. But
yeah.
So talk a little bit about. Can you tell some stories about things that have happened to you in your work?
Yeah, I mean, I remember one day I was meeting with a friend of mine at a cafe in Asia, and this other woman, probably in her 20s, walks up to me and sees me. I'm blonde, so I really blonde hair, blue eyed. I stand out like you wouldn't believe when I'm out in Asia. And this young woman sees me at the cafe and approaches me to see if I could help her with her English. And I said, you know what, I don't have time for that, because I have my day job, and then I have all my ministry work that I do. And I ended up inviting her to join me anyway at our Bible study. And so she shows up at our Bible study a few days later, and I'm leading this Bible study. And at the end, as we finish praying over one another, and she comes over to me and throws her arms around me and through tears says, "Never before in my life have I felt so much love as I did here tonight. And before I came here, wow, I never even heard of Jesus Christ. Never heard of him. But now," she said, I want to know more about him and his love for me." And wow, that just kind of stopped me in my tracks. Yeah.
Isn't that amazing? And, yeah. I mean, wow.
Yeah. And not too long ago, I was with a friend of mine at a bookstore, the other side of this large city. You know, it's got something like 20 million people in this city. And he and I were chatting, and he mentioned my Asian name. And this woman looks up, and she sees me, and she just rushes over to me and starts sobbing on my shoulder. And I don't know who this person is. You know, it's randomly, you know, random woman walks up to you at a bookstore and starts crying over your shoulder. And after she kind of like in between heaves and sighs, she comes up and she said, "I'm sorry, you probably don't even know who I am." And I'm like, "Well, you got that right. I don't, you know." But she said, "It's me, it's Lana." And I said, "Lana? Wait." And she said, "Remember me?" She said, "4 years ago, you helped me through a difficult time. I had provided her some, you know, just some light counseling for some difficulty she'd been going through. And through a connection that she gave me as a result of helping her through this difficult time, I was able to start the first young adult fellowship for Asian Catholics in this large city I was in. And so I remembered her very well, but I lost contact over several years." And she said, "Yeah, I lost my phone and I lost all my contacts with it. But," she said, "praise be to God, I see you today." Because she said, "When you came to help me during that time in my life, I was going through such a hard time and I didn't know how I was going to make it through. But you encouraged me so much." And she said, "I had friends who were Christian who kept telling me to believe in God, but I said, I don't believe in God." And they said, "Well, you should pray." And she said, "Well, how do I pray to a God that I don't believe in?" And she had posed that same question to me. And so I had talked to her and encouraged her about, you know, the beauty of the perseverance of prayer and about how God is just always there waiting for us. You know, and he hasn't left us. It's just about us recognizing his presence there, sort of like the two men on the road to Emmaus. And so she did. She said she made a commitment after I had helped her to try to pray to whatever she felt every day. And she said it took me almost a year, and then just God revealed himself in such a beautiful way. She said she got baptized the next year, and she met her future husband in church a year after that. And she said just everything in her life, she was just so grateful to this young American woman who decided to show up, you know, on her own in Asia and help change her life. And she said that just everything she had, all her joy, her happiness, her knowledge of God, she just was so grateful for. And those are the kinds of things serving as a missionary that you can't put a price tag on.
Yeah. Wow, that is so beautiful. You know, it's amazing. I've read somewhere that by 2035, China is going to be the largest Christian country on the planet. And you hear stories like that of people who. Go ahead.
Oh yeah, I was going to say by virtues of the numbers and their population, and our missionaries are serving in Hong Kong. We're getting ready to serve in India. And I've worked in China doing counseling work out there. And I talk to people because when I do go to China, I regularly go to church there. And I hear there's such a spirit that's so strong and alive in the churches over there. And so when people talk about how the numbers are growing Christians in China, if you step into one of those churches, you'll believe it. There's one church I go to when I'm working in China with my counseling work that if you're not at Mass a half hour ahead of time, you won't find a seat because there are so many people who are there to attend Mass at that church. It's really quite incredible.
Wow. It's amazing. I mean, the part of it that's difficult, you know, to grasp here in the West, for example, is somebody saying, I've never heard of Jesus until, 5 minutes ago. It's hard for us to grasp something like that because Jesus is so embedded in our culture. We hear the name of Jesus all the time and, that sort of thing, often taken in vain. But the idea that Jesus could be a completely unknown commodity and someone could have their first encounter with the gospel in their entire life is really amazing to me. You're listening to Connecting the Dots. I'm your host, Mark Shea, and we will be back with Trisha Bulla right after this.
Redbox Media invites you to bless the yes. Your designated parish, school, club, or nonprofit will receive 50% of all revenue from the sponsorships. To find out more about Bless the Yes, visit redboxmedia.com.
Welcome to the Dots. I'm your host, Mark Shea, and we're here today with Trisha Bulla. Trisha is a Catholic evangelist, an apostle working in Asia. She runs the St. Francis Xavier Lay Missionary Society and is doing amazing work all over Asia. Happily, she happens to be back in the United States right now. And so I thought it'd be fun to have her on the show to just talk about some of her adventures doing lay missionary work. One of the things, Trisha came over to my house, a couple of years ago now. And she was in the area. And so I had her over for lunch and just hit it off right away. I just like Trisha Bull a lot. She's just great people. And I love what she's doing. I love the work that she's doing. So I try to boost your work wherever you go, Trisha, because it's so great. And one of the things that struck me was how much of a charism of faith you have. There is such a thing as a charism of faith. Paul talks about different charisms. Charisms are gifts that are given to all the baptized, not just to some of the baptized. And their purpose is to help build up the body of Christ, renew the face of the earth. And one of those charisms that you'll see people who have this, people who just have an amazing trust, for example, in the providence of God, who just step out and say, since God has called me to this work, he's going to have to pony up
so that I can do this stuff, because I can't do it without his help. So here I go. And you just march off, you know, you just like get on a plane and go to wherever, you know, Singapore or someplace, and you get off the plane and you're not even sure where you're going to sleep that night. And it just comes through. So I want to talk a little bit about that experience that you've had of God's provision and of your confidence that he'll provide. Can you tell some stories about that?
Yeah, sure. I mean, you really summed it up well. When I like to give a movie analogy about it sometimes, the charism of faith, and it's very much like, for those of you who have ever seen Field of Dreams, you know, or the guy literally bets the farm on this voice, this deep sense of that they're being called to something, and that you will, there's a willingness to risk just about everything that other people would think is beyond common sense, but for something greater, for some better good that God has called you to. And I remember a few years ago when I was doing a lot of solo missionary work, and I was flying into Hong Kong to meet with a lot of people to see about starting our mission there with the St. Francis Xavier Lay Missionary Society. And I had tried setting up a bunch of meetings. I hadn't heard back, and I had already bought my plane ticket like 3 or 4 weeks ago in the hopes that these would all come together. And I didn't have a place to stay. My meetings were uncertain. And I thought, well, you know, I'm just going to fly anyway and see what happens. And I flew in the time that I had left the ground and the time that I had arrived and set foot on the ground in Hong Kong, five out of the seven people that I had contacted had gotten back to me, like in the air. And when I got on the ground, I met up with a friend of mine, Charmian Lam, who's just this wonderful ball of energy and spirit. And she said, well, where are you staying? And I said, well, I don't really have anything figured out quite yet. And she said, well, let me, well, when we're done with lunch, you can have coffee with a friend of mine, because I really want her to meet you. And then maybe when we get back from that, I can connect with you and see if we can't find you a place to stay. And when I was meeting with her friend asked me the same question. And she said, and I said, well, I don't have a place yet. I have a backup at a hostel in this very seedy part of Hong Kong. And she said, oh, we can do better than that. She calls up a friend of hers, and turns out he's a Maryknoll priest, and they have a room available at the Maryknoll house in Stanley. And for the amount of time that I'm going to be in Hong Kong, they say, yeah, we got that set up for you, except for your last night. Your last night, you're going to have to figure something out. And so I said, well, how am I going to get down to Stanley? Because that's very far away in Hong Kong. And I had all my stuff with me. She said, oh, that's fine. I have a car. You know, in Hong Kong, knowing somebody with a car is not very common. And so here, within hours of touching down on the ground, I had a place to stay, not just a place to stay, but this beautiful room overlooking the ocean with the Maryknoll missionaries, and got to know this wonderful person, got to know these great Maryknoll priests who have done such great work in Hong Kong and other parts of Asia. And then for that last night that I needed a place to stay, I attended a young adult Bible study group, and by the end of that conversation that I attended with them, not only did I have a place to stay for my last night in Hong Kong, I also had enough money to cover all of my expenses. Everybody pitched in under the table, and it came literally, I broke even plus $5 for the entire time I was in Hong Kong. And I mean, it was incredible. It was just, you know, I flew in not having anything lined up. By the time I got down on the ground, within hours, I had my housing figured out. I had meetings that were wonderful that all came together. But I needed to step out in faith, and God rewarded that. So it was really neat.
Yeah. That's fantastic. Yeah, I mean, that kind of apostolic trust. It's the kind of stuff that you read about early missionaries doing, just assuming, well, look, God's put me here, so he's got to make it happen. And God comes through, you know.
in these amazing ways. Talk about a little bit about the church abroad, especially the church in Asia that you're encountering, and the, you know, some of the ways in which it's growing and networking. You know, Protestants and Catholics are, for example, they're working together, particularly in places in Asia where the church is persecuted.
Yes.
Talk a little bit about that sort of, you know, ecumenism of the trenches, if you will.
Yeah. So, I mean, I do my missionary work in Hong Kong, India, and other parts of Asia, but I also do counseling work, teach counseling and other like life skills in China. And so not just in parts of India, Hong Kong, and Japan, et cetera, do I get to witness the church, but I also get to see the church alive and well in China as well. And when I've been over there working, you know, that's a place where there's still persecution within the church, and especially with crosses being torn down from churches in parts of China, and it's happening across the board, not just with Protestant churches, but also with Catholic churches, not just with these underground churches, but also with official state-run churches, and it's really brought together. From all accounts that I've heard, it's actually brought the people together. The people of God have come together in the face of this form of persecution to really stand tall in their faith, and it's beautiful to behold. And in the places where I go to church, where persecution isn't really found, like in the capital and city, there's still this beauty within the community. And there is quite a few misunderstandings between Catholics and Protestants, but I've also shared my faith with friends that I have who are both Chinese Catholic and Chinese Protestant, and have been able to promote this great dialogue between the two. And I have Chinese Protestant friends who are very happy to go to Mass, and also some of my Chinese Catholic friends who will sometimes attend Protestant Bible studies because they find that very enriching as well. And so it's really neat to see this level of crossover, this ecumenism that's happening. And I think when I look at where we're doing missionary work in Hong Kong, there's a Curcio movement, an ecumenical Curcio movement in Hong Kong called Walk to Emmaus, which has really just championed the idea of Christian ecumenism amongst Catholics and Protestants there in the most amazing way. Mm. And I had the special experience of being able to go through a Walk to Emmaus Curcio in about a year ago now in Hong Kong. And it was really neat to see how so many of our Protestant and Catholic brothers and sisters were really joined together to grow in their faith, to deepen their understanding of Christ alive in the Word, Christ alive even in the Eucharist, which is really neat about that. So it helps some of our Protestant brothers and sisters see what the Mass is really all about, because many of them have never experienced Mass for the first time. So, and then they just come up with just a deepened understanding and respect for one another, and what each person is able to bring as a member of the body of Christ to the table, so that we can all work together, united in one baptism, one spirit in Christ, to share the faith with others and radiate that love, that joy of Christ.
That's so great. Yeah, one of the impression that I get, and believe it on the church in Asia, but the impression that I get is that for a here in the West, the relations between Protestants and Catholics are freighted with the weight of a lot of historical memory because both Protestant and Catholic, what went with that a lot of times were, you know, ethnic differences and the differences between the nation states that played host to Protestant Catholic mm-hmm. cultures. But a lot of that is just, it's not there for, there's no, that burden of historical memory isn't there for Chinese converts.
Lightbox Media invites you to Bless the Yes. Your designated parish, school, club, or nonprofit will receive 50% of all revenue from the sponsorships. To find out more about Bless the Yes, visit breadboxmedia.com.
My darling Clementine, thou art lost. Oh, sorry. I just like singing the words of my darling Clementine to Ode to Joy. I was asking a question before we went to break. One of the things that it seems to me, as someone who has zero expertise in Asian Christianity, but the impression that I get is a lot of the historical baggage that exists here in the West between Protestants and Catholics is perhaps not eliminated, but greatly muted or mitigated in Chinese Christianity, that people who become Christian in China, their goal is discipleship to Jesus, not continuing the wars of the 16th century. And so I get the impression of more cooperation between Protestant and Catholic in Asia than sometimes you see here in the West. How far off am I?
I would say it's a mixed bag. So on the one hand, I would say yes. You hit close to the mark, Mark, by saying that a lot of the sort of historical baggage that has created such a strong divide between Catholic and Protestant Christianity does not exist to the degree that it exists here in the West. And that's good. Contextual cultural context that has allowed a lot of that to prevail over the decades and centuries isn't really present to any real degree in parts of Asia. However, what you do still sometimes see is well-intentioned missionaries who have come over to Asia to share the faith. And a lot of times, if their own faith isn't well-grounded in strong theology, they will bring a lot of their own personal biases and misinterpretations along with them, and then pass that down to the people in their particular church group. So I have seen that. And where I do see it among Asian Christians, I look at it not as a fault of that particular Christian, but as a flaw of the missionary who brought that to them, because they would have no reason to believe, for example, that Catholics worship Mary, if you're a random Hong Kong Christian, unless you had a Protestant missionary tell you that. There wouldn't be a real reason. And when I've asked people about it, where'd you hear that? Oh, the missionary who brought me my faith told me that. And I can't fault the mission. I'm grateful for the missionary who brought them their faith. I just had hope, would hope that that missionary was, you know, better versed in some of aspects of their faith, or was able to bring the faith without all the kind of their own personal biases and prejudices along with it. So you'll see a little bit of both, I think.
Okay. Yeah, and that, you know, I'm sure that does happen. I mean, one of the downsides of the Christian missionary effort in China over the centuries, or not, well, I'm thinking of Asia, you know, because we saw this in Japan as well, and other places. Mm-hmm. But one of the downsides of the encounter between East and West, because our cultural heritages are so different. So, for example, you saw in the mid 19th century, the Taiping Rebellion, and that started because of probably the single most tragic encounter between the gospel and Asia, I think in all of history, some Chinese guy got a hold of, I think, a King James Bible or something, and somehow or other convinced himself that he was the Son of Heaven, Jesus's younger brother. And not only convince himself of this, but I mean, managed to begin this vast religious political movement that resulted in a colossal war that almost no Westerner has even heard of, that killed millions of Chinese. Yes. And so you can, after something like that happens, you can see why, for example, you know, the Chinese would be leery. of more missionaries coming in after something like that. And it's just, it's one of those weird things that is, you know, the West has a lot of problems, but it's been quite some time since somebody got the gospel that screwed up. You know? And so... that's one of the odd paradoxes. Is on the one hand, you can have encounters like your friend I think you said Hong Kong, you know, who literally had never heard of Jesus until that day, so has no prejudices. You know, there's no. She's not having to battle through layers and layers of history of terrible things that Christians have done. And she's able to just sort of encounter Jesus face to face in simplicity. And that's fantastic. But the downside of it is you can have people who, can do things like that. And come up with all kinds of crazy things. I had somebody come up to me one time and ask me about some, I guess there's some sect in Korea or something. My guess is there might be dozens and dozens of sects in Korea. I'm not sure. But this one had some really loopy theology that I'd never ever heard of before. And that was my response was, that's the kind of thing that I only hear of coming out of the Asian church, because there's a certain kind of simplicity that can get things terribly wrong in simplicity as well as terribly right.
It's one of those things you're really grateful for, like, the magisterium.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. You know, just stick with the magisterium. And
if you're really curious, you're like, okay, well, what does the church actually say about this? And you can go back to that, you know?
Yeah. Well, have you, I'm just sort of curious. I mean, talk about, because, I mean, it's easy to talk about, you know, problems and that sort of thing. But talk about some more of the success stories that you've seen of people who have... really grabbed hold of Jesus with both hands and run with the faith.
Well, I know this one young man in Asia, and he was really struggling with his life. He was kind of like a social outcast in his university. And he and his girlfriend at the time were looking at a lot of different faiths, because they're like, there's got to be more to life. I mean, they were looking at anything from Buddhism to Hinduism to UFOs. I mean, they were looking all across the board, and all over the place. And then they met this nun, and she was just kind of sharing her faith with them a little bit, and they were asking her questions, and they liked her answers. And so they started looking into it more and more, and pretty soon they just went, boom, straight headlong into the Catholic faith, and they realized this was the answer to all of their questions, and it provided so much meaning and understanding to their lives and everything else that seemed so empty from what their society was telling them. And they realized there's so much more, and they were finding everything they were looking for in the Catholic faith. And now he has started his own online group. He's a Catholic apologist in Asia. He really helps a lot of not just non-Christians, but also Protestant Christians and even other Catholics, Asian Catholics, to have a deeper understanding of their faith. And he's really gone really far with that. And his wife now, she's just this prayer warrior, just as amazing things. That's just really, really incredible. And they're a really neat couple, and they're fun. I really enjoy spending time with them on my visits with Asia. And the husband and I have worked together on leading one of the Bible studies that we do at one of the churches that I work at. So, yeah, so they're just, you know, and they've only been, they were baptized in the faith, I think, like 7 years ago.
Really? How widespread is... How wide... Hello?
Go ahead, yeah.
Oh, okay, I was going to say, how widespread is the use of English language materials in Asia?
I mean, you can get English language material in a lot of places. It's getting the local language that's
important. We're up against the break, but we'll continue that conversation after the break. You're listening to Connecting the Dots. I'm your host, Mark Shea. We're here today.
Breadbox Media invites you to Bless the Yes. Your designated parish, school, club, or nonprofit will receive 50% of all revenue from the sponsorships. To find out more about Bless the Yes, visit breadboxmedia.com.
And welcome back to Mark Shea. And we are here today with Tricia Bulla. We're talking about her work as an evangelist, Catholic evangelist, and apostle at work in, all over Asia. She's been everywhere. She does it all, and she does it well. And I was curious how much English language material is being used in Asia versus how much material is being generated there by the church in Asia itself is creating its own material. Because I get, you know, for example, I'm constantly getting requests from Catholics all over Africa, for example, who write me and say, can I have some copies of your books? And and I see the work, for example, of I've got a number of friends who are, you know, from, you know, Nigeria or Kenya or wherever, and they look to especially to American made materials for their own evangelistic work. And I'm curious how much English language material is used in the church in Asia.
Yeah, so I think if you're looking at the church in Asia where English is predominantly spoken, for example, in India, you'll find a large number of English language material. You know, a lot that was produced in the West that's used over there, but you'll also find a lot of indigenous literature that they've written. There's quite a few prolific Indian Catholic writers that are pretty well known. One of the authors, in fact, has a book that's produced pretty well over here called How Big Is Your God? And that's a pretty good book to help people look at our faith in a different way, incorporating a little bit of Eastern understanding of approaching who God is in our lives. And but at the same time, if you're looking at places like Japan, Hong Kong, you're going to find imported English language materials that are used by some people. But because the English language capacity will vary quite a bit from Japan, Hong Kong, even like China, well, you'll find English language stuff. It's not as helpful In Hong Kong, yes. There's a lot of people who speak English quite well, and they can take advantage of that. There's a lot of work that's increasing numbers of work that are in translation. In Hong Kong, mm-hmm. Taiwan, for example, some of Father James Martin's books have been translated. Scott Hahn, even some of Matthew Kelly's stuff. A lot of the lives of the saints have been translated into the local language in Japan, China, etc. But it's relatively low numbers. And when I walked into Protestant bookstores in different parts of Asia, huge, vast numbers of books that have been translated into the local language. But among Catholic literature, there's not very much, and there's a great need for it. There's a great need for a lot more, especially where there aren't a lot of local Christian writers. They need more stuff, at least from the West, to help inform the faith. And then that can mm-hmm. give rise to greater creativity as people become more learned about the faith. They can write right. more. And so there's a great need for more stuff in translation. I'm praying for Word on Fire is supposed to get Catholicism into Chinese pretty soon. I'm just can't wait for that to happen. I think they're working with Hong Kong to do that.
Okay. Yeah, it's one of the things, you know, as a writer myself, as one of the things that I'm curious about, because I've thought about, you know, how would I get my books translated into Chinese? And for me, I mean, the big puzzle about translation, of course, into another language is you are entirely dependent on the translator to do a good job. You don't have any idea, especially with Chinese. I wouldn't have the slightest clue if
yeah.
my work was being rendered into anything that was remotely related to what I actually said. So, you know, that's always an interesting problem. But
yeah, get to know your friendly local SVD. That would be. I mean, there's actually. Sorry, SVD is actually. Your friendly Society of the Divine Word. What is the SVD? The SVDs, okay. They're a group. Yeah, the Society of the Divine Word Missionaries. They're a wonderful religious okay. order of brothers and priests and brothers who a lot of their work is focused around being able to translate works of faith into the local language. And they do a lot okay. of good work in Asia, as well as in other countries, to get works translated. I know one of the people who, the guy who runs Claritian Press in Asia, he's out of Argentina, and he's getting all kinds of good works translated into the local languages. And we need more of that. If you wanted to get a book translated, and I really encourage that, is you find a really good publisher who has a strong history of doing translation work in Asia, and contact them. And I actually have contacts of quite a few different publishing houses where some really good translations have been done, and to go through them. And because we would love to have more works translated out in the field. We definitely have a paucity right now, and we could use a whole lot more.
Okay.
So if you want to get Mary, the Mother of God, or Son of the... yeah, Mother of the Son.
Mary, Mother of the Son,
get it translated? Yeah, I'd love to get that translated.
That's an interesting idea.
You know, yeah, on whose authority or any of your other great books. I'd love to get this.
Well, that is an interesting idea. I will keep that in mind. Society of the Divine Word. Okay. All right, fantastic.
Yeah.
Well, let's see. Got a couple of minutes, but I want to talk just a bit more about your work and how people can support what you're doing.
Yes. So we always can use prayer, but more than that right now, we need a lot of finances. We have two new missionaries we're training this summer who will be serving for a year in Asia. And we're trying to get them housing in Hong Kong, or you know, paying for their airfare, their daily living expenses. You know, that gets, you know, it adds up, especially in Hong Kong. It's one of the highest, most expensive places to live in the world right now. But 80% of the people in Hong Kong don't know the gospel. And so there's a huge missionary need there. There's other parts in Asia that we're also moving into. And we also do a domestic ministry here, reaching out to Asians who don't know about Christ here back home in the States. And so we could really use your financial support. You can go to our website, www.laymissionary.org, laymissionary.org, and you can donate to us there. And also, this missionary is losing her housing. So even though I do a lot of mission work overseas in Asia, there's always a place you need to come back to called home. And I'm missing that place. I'm going to be losing that place to call home. So if anybody has any good connections in the San Francisco Bay Area, that would be wonderful. That'd be a great way to support our mission.
Oh, okay. Okay. All right. Gosh, I wish I knew more people in San Francisco. I don't. I live in Seattle. What can I say? I mean, that's 1,000 miles
away from here. Beautiful place to live too.
But it's true. Well, you know, and if you ever wind up in Seattle, by all means, look us up. But we can we'll figure out some way to help out if you're in Seattle. So go online to the St. Francis Xavier Lay Missionary Society. You can just Google it; it'll pop right up. And Xavier is spelled with an X, just in case you don't know that. And so X-A-V-I-E-R. And go there and please, by all means, help the work that Trish is doing and the other members of the St. Francis Xavier Society. It's vital work, and it's such fruitful work. I mean, you guys are as I mentioned earlier, China is going to be the largest Christian country on the planet in 20 years. You know, they're going to be sending missionaries here one of these days because they're swelling up and bursting with converts. And so it's interesting. It's sort of like the experience that the Roman Empire had of Christianization. You know, you had this vast pagan empire, and it just became Christian. And we're seeing something like that happening now in China, and it's an amazing work of the Holy Spirit taking place in the world. And it's heartening to hear these stories because so much of the news here in the West is focused on the church in the West, or is focused on the ongoing tragedy of the church in the Near East as it's suffering persecution under Islam and so forth. And to be sure, the church in Asia suffers persecution as well. But man, you know, the church in Asia is just kind of shakes that all off and just keeps going, you know. And it very much reminds me of the early apostolic church. So, and you're part of that. So thank you for the work that you do.
Thank you, Mark. It's a blessing to be a messenger of the gospel of Christ. And that's something we're all called to do. So.
Yep. Well, I want to thank you for connecting the dots. I'm your host, Mark Shea. Our producer is Ethan Boland, and I will be back tomorrow with Stephen Cardonis, Deacon Stephen Cardonis. Until then, have a great evening. Bye-bye.